Even now you can only see the outer husk of the inner reality, for the realities of creation cannot be seen. They have to be absorbed and entered into, as you are trying to do now. Thus gradually, as you grow to it, you begin to become at one with creation and are able to appreciate its glories and its wondrous purpose. The earth is surrounded by such a flocculence of dark thoughts that its atmosphere has become opaque and the minds of men so dense and circumscribed that it is impossible to see the universe as it really is. Now I would like to show you an even rarer aspect of what you are looking at, and to do that I shall have to divest you of some of the veils that still limit your perception. Please close your eyes. As I did so I felt once more the smoothing control of Zero's influence, together with the impact of a will far more powerful than I had believed to be possible. I felt as though I was slipping out of a clinging garment. Then stillness, a stillness beyond even silence, an absolute quietude of mind. At last an order to open my eyes. And oh! What wonder! Can you imagine a man who has been blind since birth suddenly receiving his sight and beholding some lovely earthly scene? For a while I could not take in what I saw. What I had beheld before bore no resemblance to this renascent glory of light and color. No longer was I looking at a myriad pinpoints of light, each traveling upon an ordered course. In an instant the whole system of stars had expanded outwards, as it were, each one developing graduated rings of iridescent colors, spread out into a tremendous area of surrounding space until the whole of it seemed to be filled with rhythmically changing shades of color. It reminded me a little of the aureole of a street lamp in a fog, only infinitely grander. "What has happened?" I cried in amazement. It seemed to my heightened senses that Zeros chuckled. He began to explain. But oh, how can I find words in which to express all that he said? It seemed that he had also unveiled my consciousness so that I could now comprehend his wordless thoughts in a way impossible to human speech. Breathlessly I drank in all he implied, assimilating it all with a sense of the goodness of God which pervaded the whole concept. I gathered that the concentric rings of light were really planes of being, each shade representing a higher octave of being, with the hard core of what we call the physical universe as the lowest level. Each star stands alone in human sight, but with each uncovering of spiritual vision it expands and opens out towards an ultimate unity, harmoniously into a wonderful whole, as the physical and geographical aspects fade into unreality. Then the spiritual origin of the whole absorbs all into an unbelievable wonder that is the manifestation of the Creator. But how can I express such a unity in mere words? As I pondered over these revelations that invested the whole scene with a wondrous holiness, Zeros caught my thoughts and swung them up into a condition of ecstasy. Like shafts of revealing light, word pictures began to form in my mind. "You are beginning to sense the real meaning of the cosmic Christ, something man has yet to comprehend, him whom you call the Savior of mankind. Yet he is so much more than that. For he is an expression of the glorious Creator about whom you have only the vaguest notion. How could you limit him who said, 'Before the world was, I am. And except through me none may enter the kingdom of heaven.' Think of those words and what they must mean. Try and visualize your beloved as spirit, undimensional and absolutely unlimited, almighty with the might of his Father, who created all this. Oh, how you human beings have shut out this supernal glory, this wonderful livingness which was meant to hold your lives within steady growth towards a divine fulfillment. You have enclosed this splendor, and so much more besides, within the narrow walls of crudelism. You have enshrined this magnificence within the tiny manifestation of his incarnation. Wondrous though that divine sacrifice was, sad as was its necessity, you see your Christ only as a man, not as a spirit, with all that that implies. Behold a reflection of his reality, a glimpse of how this glorious spirit holds the wide universe within his love, holding to his heart the lives and loves, yes, even the hates, of the Father's erring children in all these endless ranges of living space, that they might not be lost forever. You can see now that the earth you know is but one phase of an existence which is rising again, after a cataclysmic fall, into the eternal life where it has its real being. It does not belong to time. For life, real life, is unending. It can only experience death as an illusion within the mists of time. The very word wars against eternal life, which is something all possess and from which they cannot be divorced. Death is a lie into whose embrace a whole fallen race has drifted. Soon, like the phoenix, it will rise again from the ashes of its dead past. Human life is but one scene from a drama already written and produced, complete with its happy ending. How could it be otherwise with a great dramatist who cannot fail? You could have no life on earth without the livingness of this Son of God, manifesting into the density of the lowest form of existence, reaching with the everlasting arms of love into the darkest pit, that not one soul might be lost. What a divine tragedy is being enacted here, almost outside your awareness. Note how each star catches a reflection of the Creator's life and rays it forth in living incandescence upon its own individual note. See how these cosmic rays are flung from star to star, each giving of itself and taking back that which it lacks, that the whole may be in harmonious sympathy. Can you realize now that the universe is one whole conception of the Creator, each part interwoven with the rest, no one heavenly body having any existence separate from the others? Cosmic rays are eternally flowing from one star to another, entering each other's atmosphere, there to be transmuted into chemical form. How could one single star escape the influence of omnipotent mind or alter the course designed for it by a mind which is omniscient? Zeros once more directed my attention to the Sunday. I gazed at it with a sense of adoration. It was so tremblingly beautiful, sounding a note of triumph and joy. It seemed to know all the secrets of the universe, unheeding the petty chaos which disturbed the rhythm of one small unit that had fallen by the way, as if it knew that the fallen one must soon be lifted again to make the divine symphony in tune once more. It was not graded in rings like the other stars, but radiated a special golden glow that seemed to penetrate throughout the heavens. No wonder the ancients sensed this divine aspect and worshipped this life-giving globe. Now I knew that it gave me far more than life, for it radiated goodness, in which no dark thought could live. Try for yourself and visualize some dark thought as having meaning within that burning light. It is impossible. As I watched, entranced by all that I witnessed, I began to hear the sound of music, like no other music I have ever heard. It had more of rhythm than melody, and it flowed over that living silence like the lapping tide, stealing into the mind as if it had been eternal ever but was only now making its presence felt, like the creative thought of God echoing through the vaults of space. Zeros made me realize that where the last faint notes of audible response begin to fade, there steal the first strains of the heavenly symphony. It is upon these soundless waves that consciousness of your reality and your oneness with the Christ of love is born into your understanding. Never can you absorb his real meaning with your intellect alone. Slowly the rhythm gathered strength as it began to fill my mind, reverberating through the universe like the thrumming of some giant power station, incalculable power held in leash, until little by little I felt myself in sympathy with it, melting into its vibrations as one's feet might carry one into a lilting dance. At last I knew what at one meant could mean. This is what I really am, all I long to be, no individual but a part of all this. I knew I could achieve no real happiness away from this divine unity. I felt an overwhelming need to give myself into the absorbing embrace of that alluring sound, to drown myself in its ecstasy. But instead I felt a slight chill, and I knew instinctively that an unbridgeable gulf remained between me and that wonder of unity. I was not yet fit for that divine reunion. Someday, but not yet. With a deep sense of loss I turned away, and the whole kaleidoscope seemed to slip, and I found myself regarding the galaxies as I had first seen them. But now I had some inkling of what lay beyond them, which I knew to be only an external manifestation of the never-ending wonder that was hidden within them. But I had gained something from my experience, in recompense for any loss. My vision was keener than before, so that I could now become aware of objective life around me. I perceived moving shafts of light that emanated from beings which themselves seemed to be all of light, whose spiritual power was being rayed down to some point on earth. These, I thought, must be spiritual beings of a high order, doing the Creator's will. And there were other beings of a lesser brilliance to be seen, but at this point my concentration began to falter, I began to tremble and to lose consciousness of my surroundings. Zeros quickly noted my condition and took charge, intimating that it was time for me to return. I was just able to catch his words as they formed themselves in my mind. You have witnessed what few human beings have ever witnessed before, you have had a glimpse of God's emissaries at work, you have seen the wheels of destiny turning. And you have drawn near, for one moment, to that ineffable mystery which is the love of God. You have not been shown all this without a reason. With a last longing glance at that vast concourse of living, meaningful points of light, I closed my eyes and let myself go. I opened my eyes to the familiar scenes in my study, the walls seeming menacingly close after the infinite expanse of space I had so lately experienced. Of Zeros there was no visible sign. As my faculties came back into consciousness, I began to wonder whether I had not been dreaming or whether the whole experience were not the product of an over-exercised imagination. Yet the memory was so deeply impressed upon my mind that I could not accept such a rational explanation. Determined not to lose one iota of the epoch-making experiment, I seized my pen and made notes of the salient points in my adventure, a record that was to extend to many pages beyond my wildest dreams. Chapter 3. The Birth of a World. On his next visit to my study, Zeros inquired after my health with an air of solicitation, but there was a twinkle in his eye which indicated previous knowledge of my well-being, that I had suffered no physical ill effects from that tremendous change in consciousness. When I had assured him I had never felt better in my life, he said, "Then if you would like to do so, we will make another little journey through time and space when I will fulfill my promise to show you a picturization of the birth of your planet, and how it was invested by the spirit of the cosmic Christ from the moment it took form." So calmly did he make his announcement that I scarcely comprehended at first the implication of what he said. But I was becoming accustomed to his incredible powers, though to this day I do not know whether he showed me an actual record of those primal events or a visual image culled from his tremendous store of knowledge. "The birth of a world is well known to your astronomers," he observed, "beginning with the formation of a nebula from essential gases, then a shaping into form through rotation, until the mass cools into the form of a planet. If we can regard this light energy or gas as the manifestation of creative thought, and remembering that matter and energy are continually changing into one another throughout the universe, then we begin to get a glimpse of the divine creative process. As the energy slows down into matter, it takes on a chemical and electrical form, which eventually makes organic life possible as a vehicle for cosmic intelligence to manifest. All matter is atomic in construction and each atom is electrical in nature, another way of expressing divine life. It has not occurred to your theologians," he went on, "to connect the cosmic Christ with astronomical processes in order to lift them nearer to reality. Yet there could be no solar system without the Christ, who, clothed in his Father's power, created it in the divine pattern. Remember, he is not only the Christ of the Christians, that would be a limitation, but the Christ of every living soul, whether they are aware of it or not. No one can deny the Christ in truth any more than he can deny ever having had a mother. For every soul is born through the maternal aspect of the Spirit of Christ, in the same way that a beam of pure light is broken into the spectrum through a prism. Pure spirit emanates from God, is received by the Christ, and through him is given identity in the myriads of souls which are born into experience. Christ is the divine prism for humanity. If that thought troubles your intellect, do not worry, just let it sink in." After some further discussion, Zeros stood and made a moving dedication of our proposed journey into eternity, asking a blessing on its purpose. As I sit in my study trying to put on paper what I recall of that supremely beautiful cosmic experience, Witnessing in retrospect the birth of our planet, I find it almost impossible to find words in which to frame it. Yet I know I must try, for even I can see the importance of that wonderful baptismal ceremony. For it cradles the whole significance of the life we humans are called upon to lead and provides a key to the seeming injustices with which almost every aspect of our existence is invested. I can now see our Earth, not as a habitat for a blindly evolving race, devoid of meaning or purpose, but a feature of a wonderful plan of rehabilitation for a fallen race of beings, spiritual in nature and origin, with nothing forgotten, nothing without purpose. I see our workaday world as shot through and through with divine life, with wonderful redemptive powers, both educative and rectifying. The destiny of man is that he must rise again, however long he delays that consummation through the exercise of his free will. In an attitude of deep humility and wonder, I prepared myself for this transcendent experience. Once more I was told to relax, lifting my thoughts to the highest level possible to me. Again I felt that swaying sensation and a gradual lightening of the body, then consciousness left me. Once again I found myself poised in space, bereft of support. But this time I was more prepared. Recollection came to me quickly and the feeling of instability soon left me. I soon located the sun, a dear familiar sight. Then I looked for the earth I had just left. It was no longer there, nor was the moon. Zeros dissipated my alarm by reminding me that we had come to witness the birth of the earth so that it could not yet have any concrete form. It was a somber thought. I must have slipped back beyond reckoning. I was timeless. Now Zeros drew my attention to where something was happening. Before my wandering eyes, a mist was beginning to gather. It seemed that some superior power was drawing essential forces from all quarters of the universe. How shall I explain it? It was as if someone were plucking blooms of rare beauty from this planet and that, to make a posy of surpassing beauty. Swirling atoms of iridescent energy began to glow with nascent life, which invested them with meaning and purpose. I could imagine that myriads of angels were at work upon a preconceived plan of creative purpose. Gradually the mass took form, first an ovoid and later a complete globe of incandescent fire. Once again the mind of Zeros influenced my own. Within that glowing mass are all the elements necessary for the purpose of the earth right through to its finality. Within its potential are the substances that will, under creative aegis, form organic life, cause primeval forests to become beds of coal for 20th century greats, and the metals for your machine age. The diamonds that glitter on the bosoms of your matrons found inception here, nothing was omitted. Even to the rectifying qualities of the soil which enable it to transmute the putrefying organic matter you consign to it, into rightful chemical constituents. Because the inhabitants designate were a fallen and perverted race, you must not blame the Creator if that perversion entered into the very fabric of the earth and affected manifestation of its chemical nature, so that its natural life became red in tooth and claw, and poisonous plants and minerals found place in the environment in which man was to find himself again. It all represents a wonderful example of a love that will not let you go. Your Christian creed and worship rest upon an idea of hope, but here is exemplified a certainty, the everlasting arms that will not be denied. Because creation is perfect, and God cannot fail. That lovely thought so filled my being that I felt uplifted as if by the finale of some great symphony. How could one fail to worship a being who could not be prevailed upon to abandon the children he had created, however great their sin, however persistent their denial of him? Now I felt better able to comprehend what was taking place. As the glowing mass took shape, I became aware of sound. Not a melody, but like the working together in perfect harmony of great cosmic forces. It was tremendous in its potential, yet soft and subdued as the whisper of spring. It seemed as if all the elements that were to be, the wind, the waves, flashing sunlight and dancing branches, had recognized their potential birth into expression and were glorifying their Creator. Surely it was the sons of the morning shouting for joy. Then began an event of such cosmic grandeur and importance that I scarcely dare to report it. The incarnation of the earth by the Spirit of the Cosmic Christ. Saint Augustine must have had a glimpse of this baptism when he declared that Christianity must have existed since the world began. Surely he was thinking of the wider aspect of Christianity based on the infinite, secure in the certainty of a plan made by a perfect creator to whom failure was impossible. Uplifted by the powerful spirit of Zeros, I now began to see with heightened senses. Obscure meanings became illumined so that I understood their import. From the depths of the universe there began to gather an influence. I can think of no better word for it. Can you imagine a great love becoming objective and weaving itself into a personality? Benign yet immensely powerful, gentle yet irresistible, with all the power of creation behind him, so bright as to consume all thought of darkness, yet understanding and forgiving all? Just as the cosmic Son of God incarnated as the Son of Man, so this wondrous spirit took shape as a personality, gathering to himself divine attributes from the vast reservoir of spirit, clothing himself with the power of his Father, the Creator of all. As a soul enters and takes possession of a human embryo, so did this oversoul embrace and hold the newborn world, indemnifying all the fallen souls which were to seek rehabilitation within its growth. Now I knew, beyond any shadow of doubt, that the destiny of the earth and of humanity was sealed from that moment. The everlasting arms were about it and would sink with it into whatever degradation befell its inhabitants, so that they could never fall beyond redemption. It was an awesome thought, but a glorious one. In the language of spirit, mankind was already saved in eternity. Only within the mists of time could defiant man continue to hide himself from the searing light of truth, which must eventually bum its way through to the errant soul and free the spirit within. All was being done in love and perfect justice. More and more did this radiant personality assume a reality that was almost a form, until I could imagine I could discern features within an aureole that would have blinded human eyes. Mysteriously beautiful, radiating love and compassion, of such purity of being that I felt an inrush of its influence which I knew would never leave me. I was profoundly moved that the waywardness of man should have motivated that prescience of compassion, how the sins of humanity must render that loveliness and besmirch that beautiful countenance. Day by day we crucify him again and again, he who is all love. Presently, it seemed to me that the cosmic Christ, this great reality of the Savior we pretend to serve, took the infant world in his arms of love and blessed it, and as he did so he made upon it the sign of its destiny and purpose. The ancient symbol of the cross within the circle, emblematic of redemption, sacrifice and wholeness. Man was now to rise upon the wings of pain, because that was the only way in which he would respond. Love. What a shameful personal interpretation have we not created out of that divine emotion, a selfless power beyond anything we have known, the greatest power in the world. No wonder, as we clutch at its shadow we find it a fleeting passion which bums and sears in its swift passage, leaving cold ashes in its wake. For here was the pristine reality, generating more power than it consumed. As I watched, its power filled the renascent globe until the glowing nebula seemed to swell and throb with a new life, individual and purposeful, absorbing the will of the personality that held it, breathing in his goodness. Our world had become ensouled. And at long last I knew what love meant. I have no memory of how that incredible experience ended. Later, thinking over the events I had witnessed, I began to realize the full meaning of those statements we have puzzled over: before the world was, I am, and the kingdom of heaven is within you. Yes, indeed, born in us, living in us, buried within us. How could such dynamic truths be confined to single creeds? Every living soul, incarnate or discarnate, must surely be heir to that wondrous love that will not be denied. None can escape it. However long they dally on the shores of time, afraid to enter into the eternity where they have their real being. As man defies it or drags it down into perversion, it blazes up into a consuming fire that bums him, but as he suffers, a new understanding is born and the fire dies down once more into the gentle warmth that means growth. Now I could see what a great lie death was, for how could that crowning glory of creation, man, die, when nothing else in the wide universe could meet anything but chemical change? Death belongs only to the mists of time and space. If only man could be aroused to a sense of his own reality and the unreality of his environment, the world would leap in response and the calumny with which the sacred name has been loaded would vanish with the dawn. I long so much for words in which to clothe my impressions of that glorious spiritual being which I beheld, so essential to our being, so far beyond our limited conception of the Christ, yet so very close to the eternal part of our being. But there are no words. I can only hope that my halting description may awaken some response in the reader's heart, where the truth of it all rests. This dearly beloved, this intimate spirit of love who drew to himself all that was precious in me, showed himself to be so much more than any of us have ever dreamed, for there is not that within the Christian portrayal which could begin to compare with that, oh so lovely intelligence and givingness which I was privileged to glimpse for one unforgettable moment. Yet it was the same spirit which manifested in Jesus, which hung upon the cross, which is invested in us and in our world. And I feel that the message I brought back is that we should lift our eyes from the cross of suffering to the cross of victory, already achieved, waiting only for a perfect moment to be shown to us. As I sat in my study, with bowed head, the force of this revelation crowded in upon me until the burden of it was intolerable. How we have clamped down upon this lovely being the limitations of one aspect only of his universal activity, he who is eternal and would have us be eternal too. For one ghastly moment I felt the whole burden of man's sin and ignorance upon my shoulders until I saw again, in retrospect, the glowing mass of that newborn world, with that lovely personality. Then it seemed to me that the warm glow of that forgiving love stole out and wrapped itself about me, soothing away my misinterpretation, lifting the weight from my shoulders. Then I realized that all was indeed good, that all suffering and frustration were to be distilled into a wonderful resurgence as man was born again into the life that he should have lived. It was some days before I was able to collect my thoughts of this experience, much less put them into words. I know that I have failed lamentably to picture for you what really transpired. I can only plead that word forms do not exist in which to convey the subtlety of that beauty which had overwhelmed me with its grace. I looked round my study walls and began to realize the oneness of all creation and the unity that held all mankind in one manifestation of the Creator. A picture without edges, a mass of humanity, myriads of beings, all forming one great idea of God, yet each being an identity by itself which could never be lost and which could have no separate existence apart from the whole. What a thought! What a revelation! It explained so much, resolved so many problems, filling the whole picture with meaning and purpose. I began to see our identity as something given to us that we might be educated in the art of learning to love God, yet something to be surrendered to Him for our progress. For who could plan better for us than He who knows all, who controls all? But the Christ cannot invade the sanctity of the soul, wrapped closely in the garment of free will, lest He delay rather than speed its progress. He can but send forth the rays of His Father's enlivening love, that in time must bump through the defenses and awaken the soul within. And if the ineffable glory of the Christ of love could be so overwhelming, what awful might and majesty must there not be in the further of us all? Chapter 4. The Garden Beautiful. For the succeeding chapters I shall have to ask the reader's indulgence, for there may be much to conflict with established ideas, much that will be difficult to accept. But this is not a history book. Rather is it a picturization of the meaning of human existence, with an underlying message of love and understanding to illumine its reality. We are told that the kingdom is within us, thus understanding can only come from within, not from any external explanation. I cannot have faith for you, I cannot love for you, I cannot understand for you, I cannot teach you, these you have to do for yourself from the illimitable sources within you. These you can trust, and that trust can broaden and grow into a faith that cannot be broken. Every human soul longs to be loved, yet there is no love so fine and so satisfying as the love of the Father. I submit that love, in its finest aspect, provides the key to all progress, unlocking every door at the proper moment. It is the greatest power in the world. In preparation for our next flight in time and space, Zeros gave me further enlightenment on the origin and development of mankind.